Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, how are you enjoying this fine spring day we're having? It feels like we're almost coming out of winter. The coaching search is over. The AD search is over. Even got a defensive coordinator, and now maybe winter is over.
Yeah, but COVID's still here.
Punctured that balloon of excitement.
Yeah, the weather's great, but if you get that virus, does it really? You don't even care about the weather.
All right. Well, you've ruined my happy mood, John. Back to business.
Yeah.
Back to reality. And
yeah, I don't know what you were thinking there for a second.
Tennessee's reality is that Josh Heupel is its football coach, and Danny White is its athletic director. And UCF's reality, John, is that Gus Malzahn is now UCF's football coach. And that, I think, led to an immediate reaction from Tennessee fans of, wait a second, did UCF hire a better coach than the Vols did? And it really adds, of course, another layer of interest, because Danny White was UCF's athletic director, comes to Tennessee, conducts a search that ultimately leads to the hiring of UCF's football coach, Josh Heupel. He could have just brought him with him to the introductory athletic director press conference. Instead, the search lasted a handful of days and wound up with Heupel in the end anyway. But UCF then goes out and brings in Gus Malzahn, who would have been, I think, undeniably a splashier hire for Tennessee. But you know, should Tennessee worry about that move at UCF, and is splashier hire better hire in this case?
You can't worry about it. That accomplishes nothing. But I think some of the fans, it will just be another blow amid so many blows that UT fans have taken through the years. I mean, their natural reaction, well, why didn't we hire Gus Malzahn? I don't think there's any way Gus Malzahn would have taken the Tennessee job. I mean, why would he go from one SEC coaching job where he won 65% of his games to another job where he would have less talent and maybe a harder road to hoe? To me, UCF offered a chance for him to experience newfound success. UCF is well situated. We talked about it before in that conference. Has some recruiting advantages better than a lot of the competition in that league. You're recruiting in Florida. Gus Malzahn's already been recruiting Florida at Auburn. It's a new lease on life for him, new lease on his career. I just think it was a great move for him. To me, the two big winners in college football this year were Alabama, undefeated national championship season, barely tested, and then Gus Malzahn, $21 million from Auburn, gets a new job at a place where he can win more games and have less pressure on him. I don't think he would have entertained the possibility of going to Tennessee. Do you?
No, I mean, really, I think both schools wound up with the type of coach that you would sort of expect. I mean, I think UCF is kind of a ready-made program. It's it's in the last few years here, it's been really a top 25 program. Maybe not so much in 2020; they went 6-4. But you know, this is a program that's had an undefeated season just a few years ago, and then Josh Heupel followed that up with some immediate success. So I think this was exactly the type of situation that Gus Malzahn's looking for. He didn't need to step into a rebuild. He didn't need to step into a program that's under investigation for recruiting malfeasance that occurred under the watch of the previous coaching staff. I think stepping into a ready-made program like UCF, having a couple good years there, and then jumping back to the Power 5 level is exactly the type of move Gus Malzahn was probably looking to make. It makes a ton of sense for him. For Tennessee, I think their reality was to hire a little bit of a younger coach, maybe a more unproven coach, someone who maybe was willing to take a chance on this job because, at its best, you know, Tennessee is a high-profile, high-paid SEC job. Now, it's not at its best right now, but if you're a young coach, it might be worth it to take a roll of the dice on that, take a risk. I think that's why Tennessee winds up with Josh Heupel and why UCF winds up with Gus Malzahn, and there's no reason why they both can't work.
I really think Tennessee fans, in a best case scenario, should hope that Josh Heupel is a young Gus Malzahn, that he's where Gus Malzahn was when he took a head coaching job at Auburn in 2013. Team almost won the national championship. You go back and look at Gus Malzahn. He was an offensive innovator, wrote a book on offense, a lot of up-tempo stuff. He was kind of ahead of the curve on all that. In a lot of ways, he's kind of grown stale. I think that's how people look at him. And that's why I don't know how excited Tennessee fans would have been about the hiring of Gus Malzahn. Maybe they would have been. I mean, his record speaks for itself. His record is good enough to warrant some excitement. But the fact is, he hadn't done a great job with quarterbacks. His system hasn't been conducive to quarterbacks. You saw that with Jared Stidham, then now with Bo Nix. And maybe that's on Bo Nix a little bit and Stidham too. But I just think with Heupel, there's the uncertainty. And maybe the uncertainty turns into great success. When Auburn hired Gus Malzahn, he'd just been at Arkansas State. You didn't know what Gus Malzahn could be. You knew pretty much like Heupel is he's an offensive guy. And so there's that potential, but you just don't know what he can do in this kind of arena in an SEC situation. And he did really well. So there's that possibility. It's just a possibility with Josh Heupel that maybe he can be the same kind of guy. And I think that's what Tennessee fans need to hope for.
Do you think who has the higher ceiling, or who would Tennessee have the higher ceiling under in this case? Do you think Gus Malzahn, if he would have listened, and I think we're both in agreement that Gus Malzahn wouldn't have been real eager to come to Tennessee, so it's sort of just playing fantasy land here. But if Gus Malzahn would have been interested in Tennessee, would have taken this job versus Josh Heupel. I think we both agree. Well, I don't want to speak for you, John, but would you agree that Gus Malzahn has a higher floor than what Josh Heupel does at Tennessee?
Yes, in a way, but because you don't know what he can do. But there's one thing also you need to consider with Gus Malzahn. Yeah, maybe his program has been a little stagnant. It hasn't won at the highest level that all SEC, many of the SEC programs crave. But he's getting another chance now. And maybe he would go into a new situation with a chip on his shoulder. Maybe he would come to Tennessee and say, okay, Auburn wanted somebody else as a head coach. Good luck with that. I'll show you what you missed out on. I don't know if he'd have taken that attitude. But in that case, would he have changed? Would he self-evaluated and look and say, why haven't I done better? He's in a horribly tough position as a second team in Alabama. You're number two to the preeminent program in the country. But if he could look at that and say, what didn't I do that I should have? I notice when he's going to UCF, he's saying, I'm calling the plays. No second guessing about it. I'm doing it. And there was always that uncertainty when he was at Auburn. He started out, he was a great play caller. Then he started, well, maybe I need to be CEO. Maybe I'll dispatch those duties to someone else. And then he would get back involved in it. It would just go back and forth with different coordinators. And I think that's a good move. That tells me that he's reevaluating what he's been doing. I think if he could have done that at Tennessee, then maybe he could have the highest possible ceiling you could hope for. I mean, there's no doubt he's a pretty good coach. You don't win 65% of your games when you're playing in the SEC West unless you're a pretty good coach.
So who are you saying has the higher ceiling, John? We say Gus Malzahn has the higher floor because you know a little bit more what you're getting with him. I don't think he would be a total flop here. Does he ultimately have the higher ceiling? Would he have at Tennessee, or does Josh Heupel, despite being more of a risk, more of an unknown, do you think he maybe gives Tennessee the potential for greater heights?
I'll try to do a better job of answering your questions. I completely ignored that, didn't I?
Yeah, I didn't find an answer to my question.
No, there really wasn't one. I didn't either. I was just kind of rambling. Maybe that's because I'm not sure. Well, yeah, you look at Josh Heupel and you say, okay, we're not sure what he can do. The thing that bothers me about Josh Heupel is when he took over the head coaching reins at UCF and he lost more games each year. His record was worse each year after he went there for 3 years. That bothers me. That makes me wonder about his ceiling. You think that's fair?
I think so. I mean, you know, part of it comes back to the question of how much stock do we put in a season played in a pandemic? And I think we came to the agreement in 2020 when Tennessee was going 3-7 under third-year coach Jeremy Pruitt that we did put stock in the season. I mean, you looked around the country, and it's not as if college football was turned on its head. I mean, the same powers that you expected to be at the top were at the top. A lot of the teams that you expected to be terrible were terrible. And then there were a few exceptions like Tennessee that you thought would be a fair bit better than you were. I mean, the sport itself wasn't turned on its head. So I think that told us both really that you have to put stock in this season because by and large, it went mostly according to script. And so in that case, I don't think we gave Jeremy Pruitt a free pass on 2020. And by that same standard, I don't think you can give Josh Heupel a free pass on 2020. One other thing I would say, though, and this is, we've discussed this on this podcast before, too. This is sort of the age-old, slogan of the loser is, yeah, but we almost won these games. And so, but I do think, John, I mean, you look at Pruitt during his tenure. I mean, when Tennessee lost, a lot of times they were getting blown out. It wasn't even remotely competitive. A lot of times when Tennessee lost during their three seasons under Pruitt. UCF in 2020, they lost by 1 point to Memphis. They lost by 3 points to a Cincinnati team that was really, really good and darn near beat Georgia at the end of the season. And they lost by a touchdown to Tulsa. They did get blown out by BYU in their bowl game. But point being, three of the four losses were within a touchdown. And again, I know that's the type of thing that everybody says after a little bit of an underwhelming season. But I do give that a little bit more credit than going out there in year three and still getting blown out by Georgia in a game that was supposed to be two top 15 teams and then getting blown out by Alabama and saying that you were knocking on the door, closing the gap. I got the phrase wrong, closing the gap with Alabama. Not to mention a 27-point loss to Kentucky.
You know, I've wasted about 10 minutes talking around this, but I'll just give it's a pretty day outside. It looks like spring is near, so I'll just say, yeah, Josh Heupel has a higher ceiling. I will say one thing in his favor that's very apparent. I give him more credit with quarterbacks than I do Gus Malzahn. I think he's done a better job with his quarterbacks. Now, he had some talented ones, but he did that at Missouri. He did fine at Central Florida, and I think that's a great need for Tennessee. So I'll say he has a higher ceiling.
John, recently for a column in the New Sentinel, you conducted a poll of media types and fans as well. I think it was kind of split down the middle, right? You talked about the same number maybe of media folks and fans. And your poll question was the same that you posed a few years ago when Jeremy Pruitt was hired. Would the new coach at Tennessee win more games throughout his tenure than the 34 games Butch Jones won in five seasons at Tennessee? I was very interested by what the results of that would show. But in the end, I think they were what I would have predicted, that media types were more skeptical. I think more, correct me if I'm wrong, more media folks than not said that Josh Heupel would not win as many games as Butch Jones during his tenure, while fans, as you might expect, remain hopeful. More fans than not said they expected Josh Heupel would win more than Butch Jones's 34 games. I think it's a really good question because it's a harder number to get to than you think. Really, to top that number, you need to be here for five seasons, I think, number one, or be really darn good in four seasons. But you probably need to be here for five seasons, and then you need to average 7 wins per season. Doesn't sound so hard, I guess, when you look at it like that, but you start thinking about it, I mean, Butch Jones is the only coach since Philip Fulmer to be here for more than three seasons, and he's the only one to make it through a full off season after his third season. Derek Dooley didn't even make it to the finish line in year three, and Jeremy Pruitt fired a month after year three ended. So I think it's when you start to think about it, it's a little bit harder than it might first appear because, two, you got to factor in year one. You know, a lot of times you're going 5-7 or 6-6 in year one, so you're already getting behind that 7-win pace and you need a 8 or 9 win season around the corner. What did you think about the results there of whether Heupel could exceed that 34 win mark?
Well, going back to the first poll when I did one, Pruitt versus Butch Jones, the media did by a slight margin favor Pruitt. They said he would win more than Butch Jones did.
Let the record show, I did not, John.
No, you didn't, and neither did I. However, again, there was a slight advantage. Now, in polling just the media members of this, it was 2-1 against Josh Heupel beating Butch Jones. That tells me most of the media is looking at this the same way I am. They're looking at a track record. You just mentioned it. All these coaches failed. Why do we think this guy will be more successful? And it's hard to project that based on his resume. He may, but it's, if you just look at it, you would have to be skeptical based on what Tennessee has done. And also the possibility that he's starting perhaps from a lower position than any of these other coaches. There's a good chance the program will be on NCAA violation probation. And also he's losing some pretty good players, starters, who are transferring. So to me, the roster is not as good as it was for Jeremy Pruitt, certainly. And Jeremy Pruitt went 16-19 in 3 seasons. I guess I could have done the poll this way. Do you think he will win more games than Jeremy Pruitt?
I think he'll win more games than Jeremy Pruitt. Number one, I think he'll probably get more than 3 seasons. And if he gets 4 seasons, I think he'll be able to beat that 16 win total. But that 34 win total from Butch is, as we've discussed, a little bit more challenging than you think, especially when you start off behind the 8-ball in year one, like Josh Heupel is. And really, I think my vote on it, I voted no. I know it was an anonymous poll, John, but I'm gonna reveal my anonymity there and say I voted no. He won't top Butch Jones's 34 wins throughout his tenure. You know, it really wasn't a reflection on Josh Heupel, not entirely. I guess maybe in part it was, but to me, it was more so the situation that he inherits. I think it's going to be a tough road to hoe here for the first couple years, and the lack of patience that Tennessee has historically shown for its football coaches, I think they'll show more patience here. But do I think he can average 7 wins across 5 seasons, knowing that it's probably going to be really difficult to even get to 7 wins in 2021, 2022? I don't know. And then you could go the other way too, John, is that he could have such raging success. He leaks out of here before, he piles up 35 victories. So there really is kind of multiple ways to cover your bet there. And I'll say this, and maybe easy to say in hindsight of the Pruitt era, I was more tempted by Josh Heupel to say that he would exceed Butch Jones's win total than I was by Jeremy Pruitt. Too many unprovens for Pruitt, never been a head coach before at any level, and he was also inheriting a difficult roster situation. I just didn't have much hope there that he was going to get to that 35 win mark. I was a lot more tempted to say yes with Josh Heupel because we have, even though the returns were starting to diminish at UCF, we have seen him be a head coach before, not a Power 5 school, but about the closest thing you can be, and rattle off 3 straight winning seasons.
Yeah, I agree. I was the same way, Blake. I just thought he would do. I thought he had a better chance of doing that than I did with Jeremy Pruitt. The one way to look at this is, though, when I broke it down and I said, okay, you're going to play 4 non-conference games. You win 3 of them. You just win 3 every year. Tennessee, that you should be able to do that. It was a rarity when Tennessee lost to BYU and Georgia State, a 25-point underdog, in Jeremy Pruitt's second season. So you win 3 games. You beat Vanderbilt, that's 4. You beat South Carolina, that's 5. I'm not impressed with its coaching hire. I'm not impressed with its roster. I think South Carolina is going downhill. And then that gives you 5. And so then you look, okay, can you beat Missouri or Kentucky? Let's just say you win one of those. That gives you 6 wins a year. You find those other, that gives you 30 wins. Can you find 4 more wins to match Butch Jones? It doesn't sound so difficult when I break it down like that. But then I got to look back and think how bad Tennessee has been at times in the last few years. And then it does look difficult. Another way to look at it, go back to when Scott Frost was at UCF, led the program to an unbeaten season. He goes to Nebraska. How would you compare Nebraska and Tennessee? Similar?
I mean, I think similar. Yeah, certainly the glory days are behind him. I do think maybe Tennessee is better positioned in some ways to restore some of that top 25 prominence. But then again, I think the road is a little bit harder in the SEC East than it is in the Big Ten West
Big
now?
Big Ten West,
It used to be the Legends and Leaders. Stupid thing.
I don't know why they came up with that.
Yeah, but I think it's maybe a slightly easier going in the Big Ten West than the SEC East, particularly with the fact that Tennessee has to play Alabama every year. So that combined with the fact that I think Tennessee's in-state recruiting is improving in terms of the talent in the state. Tennessee's not securing enough of that talent, but I think the talent in the state's improving. The proximity to Georgia, Florida. Yeah, I'd give Tennessee a little bit of the edge over Nebraska.
Well, but then think about it from coaching perspective. Scott Frost is one of the hottest coaching commodities in the country. I think he could have had the Florida job. I think Florida would have hired him. Instead, he goes back to his alma mater, and he has really struggled there. I mean, for all his success at UCF – and I know Nebraska doesn't have a great recruiting base. It does have great tradition. And it's not in the toughest division in its conference. I really thought he'd do better there. That makes me wonder about how much talent you can get at UCF compared to other schools. Maybe you can get more than I realized, even though it's not a Power 5 conference school. I just think all this stuff, it just makes it really murky. And hard to say, yeah, he'll do better than Butch Jones. I think it would be very hard for me to say, oh, there's no doubt. And for anybody to say, there's no way that he won't win more than Butch Jones. I don't see how anybody could say that.
John, we're not shy about offering grades and opinions here on the front end of things, and we would like to hear the grades and opinions from our listeners as well, certainly if they're positive grades. If you could take a second to give us a good review on this podcast, that helps other people find our podcast. It helps keep John and I doing these podcasts. You know, we've been doing these remotely since about April now with the pandemic, but we enjoy doing this every week and would like to do it even more. So if you can give us a good rating, that'll keep us on the air and keep us doing these podcasts. John, I wanted to shift gears here and kind of a final thought. Some recent news I wanted to cover with you was the release of 3 players from their national letters of intent who signed during the Jeremy Pruitt era in December. Pruitt was still the coach, fired a month later. And 3 of those players asked for their release from their national letter intent, and Tennessee, as I think we expected they would do, granted that. That's 4-star defensive lineman Dylan Brooks, 4-star running back Cody Brown, and 3-star offensive lineman Jamarian Gooch. How damaging do you think the departures of those three players are from the class? The class is down to 19th overall nationally in the 24/7 sports composite. Is this something that Tennessee should be sweating? I guess, is it just simply a reflection of this is what happens when you fire your coach in mid-January?
Yeah, I don't think it would be as damaging as if Tennessee had denied their request. I think that would have been an enormous PR blunder that Tennessee would have struggled to come back from. I just think it would have really hurt its image. Here's a losing program, and now they're playing tough with guys they signed when they – knew they would probably fire the coach. So I don't think Tennessee had any real choice on that. I know there's some fans that think otherwise. But look, Dylan Brooks may turn out to be a best player, but just think how many of Jeremy Pruitt's highly touted recruits, 4-stars, who really haven't done that much. So losing 3 players, 3 signees, I just don't see that as extremely significant. I don't know if it would affect, I doubt it would affect Tennessee's win total. I mean, do you think it would affect their win total over the next 3 years, whether they had those three guys or not?
Not so much, and that's a good question. I think it forced me to think about it from a macro level. I like that because, yeah, overall, I don't know that the loss of these three guys is going to affect the win-loss record. I think looking at it more from a micro level, the loss of Dylan Brooks, I think, hurts. Tennessee needed some help, some quick impact help on defense. I think he would have been in probably the two deep rotation on the defensive line. He would help with their pass rush. And really just their number of bodies they signed on defense wasn't real big in this class. They signed six defensive players, only two of them with a four-star rating. The other four have three-star ratings. And then there's two other players who could wind up on offense or defense. So at most, they signed eight defensive players. At the low end, they signed six. And you combine that with the fact that Bryce Thompson, their best defensive back declared for the NFL draft, starting inside linebackers Henry Toa and Kavarius Croucher in the transfer portal, and top pass rusher DeAndre Johnson transferred to Miami. Other top pass rusher Kevon Bennett got kicked off the team before the end of the season. So you had a defense that I think was already depleted of some of its top talent, and then you add into the fact that now they're down to just six defensive signees, or eight if you count those two versatile athletes. That, to me, is where I think this is sort of damaging, is losing not only the best player in terms of rating from this class in Dylan Brooks, but another body off that defensive side of the ball. The other two guys, Cody Brown and Jamarion Gooch, I mean, Gooch, a three-star offensive lineman, you never know what that's going to turn into, but overall, I'd say that really just impacts you from a depth perspective. Cody Brown, nice rating, but, you know, I mean, he's kind of a big-bodied running back that I feel like maybe fit more for where Jeremy Pruitt wanted to take the direction of the offense than this up-tempo, warp speed, spread the field type system of Josh Heupel. And really, I know you and I both like the junior college running back edition, Tyon Evans. I also like the speedster running back that they added in this class, Jalen Wright. I really think he could fit well into Josh Heupel's system. You bring back Jabari Small, a running back who got some time this past year, Dee Beckwith, and some other wild cards. And I think Tennessee's not where it could be at running back if they would have kept Eric Gray or if they would have kept Ty Chandler. But I think Tennessee's prepared to weather the storm there at running back and offensive line. But I do think, you know, there's no denying that on a macro level, I don't know how much the loss of Dylan Brooks impacts your record, but I do think, you know, If you really didn't want to lose a guy from this class, particularly on defense, you didn't want to lose Caden Salter on offense, but you didn't want to lose Dylan Brooks on defense. But I also give Josh Heupel credit, John, because if you would have told me that Tennessee could fire its coach in mid-December, hire a new coach in late January, and only lose three players from that December signing class, I'd actually say that's pretty good. I would have thought you would have had more than just three guys trying to get out of their letters of intent. I think, you know, well done for Josh Heupel and his staff to help make sure that even more of those guys weren't looking for the exits.
I think a lot of that, too, just comes, think of all a recruit goes through in deciding on a college. It's a long, involved process, and you finally make a decision. Now you want to turn around and change your mind? I just think a lot of guys don't want to even think about that. They've gotten situated. Some of them have even started their college clocks. So I just think there may be some laziness involved where they just don't want to, I don't want to fool with going somewhere else. Let me go here for a year and see what happens.
And is that how you wound up in Knoxville for 35 years as columnist, John? You got here and you're like, the heck with it. I'm not moving anymore. I've moved enough. I just stay here.
Well, I moved around a lot before this. I was all over the country. So there's probably something to be said for that. I just got tired and lazy.
All right. let's hope our bosses aren't listening into that, John. But it's
no,
been...
they don't listen to this.
Okay, great. All right, final verdict, John. I'm going to hold you to this. No pivoting away from it. Your final verdict. Josh Heupel has a lower floor than Gus Malzahn, but a higher ceiling. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. It's settled. No more dodging. We can pick that up next time and see if we can get to the point a little quicker. But for now, thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.